I'm reading today from Digging to America by Ann Tyler, starting at page 141. In July, she went to Vermont to visit her double first cousin, a daughter of an uncle on her father's side and an aunt on her mother's side. Farrah was several years younger than Marianne, and different from her in almost every way. Living in an area where everyone else was a native, married to an ex-hippie she had met while she was studying in Paris, she had chosen to become exaggeratedly Iranian. She met Miriam's plane in an outfit so exotic that even in Tehran, people have gawked. A maroon satin tunic over tight white leggings, curly-toed sequined slippers straight from a Persian miniature, and a bib of golden chains that all but covered her plump bosom. "Miriam John! Miriam John!" she shrieked, jumping up and down. Everyone else at the gate, pale and drab by comparison, turned to stare at her. "Salaam, Mary June!" she cried. For a moment, Miriam wanted to pretend she had nothing to do with this woman. But then, when they were face to face, she saw Farah's Kerem-Zadeh eyes, long and narrow, with pointed corners, and the Kerem-Zadeh nose, as straight as a pin. Unlike Miriam, Farah was letting her hair go gray, and the gray hairs frizzed and corkscrewed up from the black, just as their grandmothers used to. During the drive from the airport, in a dusty beige Chevrolet with a back seat full of machine parts, Farah spoke Farsi in such a rush that it seemed to have been bottled up inside her. She relayed all the news from home, quoting telephone conversations, not just word for word, but in the appropriate voices. Their cousin Sholeh's thin whine, their second cousin Kaveh's bullish bellow. Farah kept in much closer touch with the family than Miriam did. "Oh, a dozen times a week," she said. "One person or another will be wearing me out with complaints, and at my expense, too." Which implied it was she who placed the calls. But why, if she found them so tedious? Some form of survivor guilt, perhaps? They go on and on about the difficulties of current conditions, their entertainment so limited, almost no films allowed, almost no music, no liquor except for what the smugglers deliver in bleach jugs after dark. They imagine my own life is sheer pleasure. They have no idea how hard it is here. To look at her, encased in satin and glittering with gold, their relatives might have laughed. But Miriam knew what she meant. It was hard, harder than the people back home could possibly imagine. And sometimes, she wondered how they both had lasted this long in a country where everything happened so fast, and everybody else knew all the rules without asking. "My sister reads off lists of items she wants me to send," Farah said. "Athletic shoes and cosmetics and bottles of vitamin pills. There are vitamins in Iran, perfectly good ones, but she believes that the vitamins in America are more powerful. I sent her a bottle of Vigorvites, and the first pill she took, she told me, 'Already I feel so much younger, I have so much more energy.'" Uttering the phrase Vigorvites led Farah to change over to English, probably without meaning to. It was a phenomenon Miriam had often observed among Iranians. They'd be riding along in Farsi, and then some word borrowed from America, generally something technical like television or computer, would flip a switch in their brains, and they would continue in English until a Farsi word flipped the switch back again. "I suppose you have less of that because your brothers can ask their children to send things," Farah was saying. "Or Parviz can, at least, with his two up there in Vancouver, where all the stores are excellent." This last sentence flipped back and forth, lickety-split, triggered first by Parviz and then by Vancouver. "And besides, you're so much stronger. You would just say no. I should be stronger. I am, how you say, floor mat." "Doormat," Miriam said. "Doormat. I am a push-off." Miriam held her tongue.